Advances in technology can be empowering, progressive, and enriching. History has shown this across civilizations and societies. But it has also shown, and the present and future will continue to show, that it is foolish, risky, flawed, and folly without us raising our individual and collective consciousness and mindfulness to accompany it, to ensure we use it shrewdly, kindly, and wisely. Rashid Ogunlaru.
Welcome to the Lost Traveler Podcast. I am your ever-loving host, Henry Cameron Allen. And today I am very excited to meet a new friend, Jeff Hardy, who is a 50-year veteran of healthcare service and facility planning, design. He's the president and founder of Care for Peace Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit based in California. Thank you for being here, Jeff, and taking time out of your incredibly busy life doing good things for this world. And you have quite a story to tell. You have quite a message to deliver that's directly tied to universal life skills for our time. Peacemaking is a universal life skill that we don't talk about in those terms. So I'm thrilled to get right into this conversation with you. Welcome.
Cool. Thank you. And welcome to whatever it is that I'm going to be asking you from now on, because I've heard enough about your story, Henry Cameron, that really deserves to be part of my story today.
Well, I hope this will lead to collaborative work on a number of levels, because I think we're both on a journey. And you had asked me before we started that, you know, where did the Lost Traveler idea come from? And it's got so many layers to it. It's very nuanced and it's sort of emerged out of the course of my life. But what came to the realization in me post-COVID is that we are all lost travelers. No one can tell you what's going to happen tomorrow. There's this uncertain feeling of when's the other shoe going to drop that we all feel. And yet with every challenge, as you know, comes opportunity. And here we have an opportunity to facilitate the positive change that the world needs for its future in perpetuity, as I know you talk a lot about. So we're going to ask each other a lot of really compelling questions. This is going to be a very pivotal and important episode. I can feel it in my bones. Where are you from? You're in California now, or?
I'm in California pretty much all my life. So, grew up here and went to school here, went to college in Sacramento, and then after that went to Europe, and after that came back and ended up fortunately joining the Kaiser team that designed the whole Kaiser Health program in the United States. And my mentors were Sid Garfield and Maury Collin, and all that because I had been in the United States Coast Guard as a reservist hospital corpsman, where it really all began. I've had a wonderful career. It's just incredible. I don't know anybody who's had as much fun as I have, or has been to as many countries as I have, helping people. That's the way it is.
Well, you've like opened hospitals in remote parts of the world, and underserved parts of the world, marginalized parts of the world, Kenya, Nigeria, Myanmar, the list goes on. Where did this impulse begin in you? You started telling me about your parents giving you a ticket to rescue you from university and sending you to Europe. That sounds like it was a pivotal moment.
Yeah, it was a pivotal moment because I was flopping around like a fish or a train without a track. I don't know. There's all sorts of analogies here. But as a lost traveler, I had still had that United States Coast Guard hospital corpsman experience. And one of the things that I learned as a hospital corpsman, which is like a nurse, taking care of Vietnam War vets, you know, that are recovering. And I realized these guys were just so grateful for my care. And I realized what care is. It was something that was active, that came from my heart, that extended to my hands and my facial expressions and everything I did. And then I also had this wonderful feeling of peace while I was delivering care. So, and this peace was completely different than any other kind of peace that we had heard before. So, for example, it's not between wars, the time between wars, because we all know that the reign of terror and the Jim Crows and all the Reconstruction stuff that occurs after a war or a civil war, that's not peace. That's right. Just anything but. So, and it's also not sitting on top of a mountain with your legs crossed, you know, and saying, that's not peace either that I experienced, because what I experience is an incredible dynamic form of peace. And it just resonated in my spirit. When I was in Europe, it was after the Coast Guard, and I'd say that that experience that I had had in the Coast Guard saved me, because I realized, wait a minute, care for other people's peace. So people I met in Europe, I practiced this feeling of care for them, and I had the most incredible experiences. I met an old woman who was an unbelievable supporter of all the houses in Amsterdam. And her husband had been twice the president of the Supreme Court of Holland. And this woman just ended up becoming a friend and helping me in my journey. I ended up teaching children in skiing in Switzerland. Okay, I mean, this story gets almost far-fetched.
There should be a movie.
I met some wonderful people when I was in Switzerland, and they invited me to England after I was in Switzerland, and I helped this guy, this filthy rich guy, build a ferro cement concrete boat in Preston, Lancashire, which is somewhere up there to the left of Liverpool. And I mean, we lived on a boat in Captain Teeb in the Mediterranean. I mean, these stories are unbelievable. And it all came from this unbelievably silent spirit caring for peace. Okay. Then back in America, I ended up working in hospitals because I had been a hospital corpsman. So I was the lowest paid ward clerk and emergency clerk, and just had an incredible time doing that. And the administrator loved me. He ended up graduating to Central Kaiser. And I'm 21 years old at this point. And he invites me to join the Kaiser team that's working with Kaiser Foundation International, building hospitals around the world. You know, it wasn't because I had any expertise. Don't get me wrong on this. It's because I was young. I had a really cute girlfriend who's been my wife for 45 years. And she went with me all over because these guys and gals who were my bosses all had high school kids who had soccer games and they had to be taken to school and things like that. And the last thing they wanted to do was go around the world. So I'll go.
Boy, what an opportunity.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I ended up going around the world, Thailand, you name it. But really, I ended up starting my own company. And that's a long, long story. I won't even start it, because then I sold it. And I decided that instead of helping all these rich people in America building huge billion-dollar hospitals, I think I'm going to help some of the poorest people in the world. So that's why I ended up in Vietnam and then eventually at Myanmar, where I decided that I'd work with some very dear friends and associates who joined me in an organization that we ended up calling Care for Peace and the Care for Peace Foundation. And we went and found a place that is so far from any roads in the middle of Myanmar, where, I mean, we had to hike to this slope, the first location where we would build a prototype health center that was also a community development center. Mm-hmm. And it is absolutely thriving today. Even though we can't go back, we absolutely, I mean, the military coup that occurred just, you know, six weeks after the American insurrection, the military coup occurred, and that was it. We couldn't go back. So that's my story. And I decided that if I can't go back, the least I can do is write a book. So I wrote a book called To Care for Peace. Now, it's also gotten an alternate title called The Care for Peace Manifesto. So, which was an idea I got from an incredible book called The Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande. And I realized this guy's saving lives by having checklists for doctors and nurses and people in operating rooms, because they don't forget things, they don't miss things. And so I said, wait a minute, that's really what I'm trying to do with my healthcare planning background, narrowly focused background, that I should be able to do something like that, that I've been doing for probably 20 years by that point, for what we're doing, we're not doing in the world. And that's where I came up with the idea that really originated from a trip I had in India, that we're in the first human evolution and it's over. I'm in a traffic jam in the middle of New Delhi, not moving anywhere, and nobody's honking their horns. Right. Go figure. Wow. Everybody's just sitting there in the traffic jam. And I'm saying, wait a minute, this is humanity right now. We're sitting here in a traffic jam. You know, this
beautiful is beautiful analogy. Wow.
We're the first human evolution, and it's dead. The first evolution is dead. Now we're in the suspended human evolution where we got to think about what we're going to do and actually do something. We don't play God. We bring God into this and play nature and start thinking about how we are going to design the second human evolution.
A guy wire is a tensioned cable that is designed to enhance the stability of a freestanding structure. Think of me as your guy wire. In terms of life skills mentoring, you're perfectly capable of standing stably on your own two feet. But I'm a cable that can enhance your stability. I'm available for individual or couples counseling, life skills mentorship, child loss grief support, LGBTQ plus support. I can also officiate weddings, end of life ceremonies, baby namings, invocations, or whatever guidance you may need. I serve all genders, all ages. Sessions are affordable, discreet, private, and conducted online. Find me at guy-wire.org. Book your appointment today. Let's reel it back a little bit and talk about, in terms of the millennia that humans have in the form that we know as, you know, modern personhood, how do you see that journey having gotten us here? Because we are, again, this is part of that lost traveler syndrome that I'm seeing globally, where we're all lost, but that also in the same moment means that we're pioneers. Everything is possible. That sounds like where you're sort of, you know, holding this, is in that liminal space between part one of our humanity and part two of our humanity. How did we get here? How did we get to this moment? For all the good and all the challenge.
There are simple answers and long answers, but I think that my simple answer, which means it'll be short, is that we're on this train without a track. And this train has more and more cars behind us. And it's going forward, but the problem is we're pulling heavier loads. So if we're looking at how we got here, it's a step-by-step, track-by-track process. You know, that's how we got there. We got there step-by-step. And for instance, I mean, tribes would fight each other and one tribe would win. So that guy is in charge, and that other tribes, and then it became nations fighting and killing. And pretty soon, you know, we've got mutually assured destruction. Now, yeah.
How far down the track have we gotten, really?
I mean, we haven't really gotten far. And also, we have not allowed our language to catch up. Here's an example. We've been using globalization. That's a word, globalization, that we've almost overused. And when, in fact, it isn't the right word. We are realizing now that, wait a minute, if we're moving towards globalization, and boy, there's people who say that we can't have globalization, and we can't. That's a fight that it hasn't even begun yet, because we are in internationalization. Internationalization is not globalization. Right. When you have one country making more weapons and saying, no, we're better than you, and our economy is going to have to put tariffs on your country because our country needs to be better. That is just simply not globalization. Globalization has to start with the global community, and it's very difficult to do that when you've got very, very well-meaning international organizations. The World Health Organization is top of my mind because these guys are awesome. Sure. Bill and Melinda Gates has done an incredible job. And of course, the United Nations. I mean, we have done a great job at moving forward in a national arena. Now, how do we use that to get to a global arena? And actually, I think we're moving there in that direction. I am not going to point fingers at these people because, darn it, they're on the train that doesn't have a track. So, exactly. I mean, we're all on that train. And this is what we're doing. And it's okay for the conductor to say, let's slow this down a little bit and see if there's a track that we can actually get on, because that's where we're at today. So now I would ask you, when we're looking at the concept of the lost traveler, is that lost traveler on the train, or is the lost track traveler by himself?
The answer is yes. I had this vision come to me recently in a dream. My dreams are very productive lately. And I've been having these conversations. There's some kind of frequency, I think, that we're all picking up on, or many of us are, especially in this work. The image is that you walk into a party, right? Equate that to the world. All right. You're walking into a party. The normal sort of, you know, accepted path into that party is that you're going to walk in and you're going to recognize, oh, there's Bill, there's Mary, there's Jeff, there's Joe over there. They're all dressed differently. They're all drinking a different cocktail, right? They're all having a good time. But that none of that matters. None of it matters. The fact of the matter is that we are not only at the party together, the party wouldn't exist if we weren't all here, but we are the party. We are the party. And so there's no separation, any separation between, that's why I think nationalism is passé. I think that this idea that we are somehow separate from one another in our religion and our politics, light and dark, and you know, all of these things, gender and ethnicity, is all superficial and illusory. What's true is that we are here and we are the party. So how to start there, recognizing that we are the train, right? We're not on separate tracks, and we're not in separate cars. We are the train. And we need to move forward together. And I hope that answers your question. But
that's an excellent answer. When I think about when we were in Myanmar, one time when I was in Thailand in the backcountry, I remember going in and meeting the villagers. And the one thing that I noticed is that anywhere I went, whether it was in the African continent or sub-Saharan or wherever we were at, I noticed that they smiled.
Yeah.
The first thing they do is they smile. And I'm saying, okay, well, and I'm smiling. We're all smiling. Now, is there a religion behind that? And yes, it is. It's called humanity.
Humanity.
And I think that if we can stay or get in contact with our humanity and just nurture that religion, then all the others will support us in our efforts. And I think that's the key. People have said to me, well, you know, are you just going to make a new religion? I says, heck no. I said, the religions that we've got in this world today are awesome.
They all say the same thing. Don't be a jerk. You are a reflection of the divine. Love your neighbor who looks and believes differently from you, right? Don't try and covet what they want. I mean, they all say the same essential human message.
Well, yeah, and they promote basic human laws. Now, I worked for a year in Bahrain in the Persian Gulf, and I met lots and lots of Arabs, some of the most wonderful people I've ever met.
Beautiful.
And one Arab who was the president of a hospital that we were actually home based in Bahrain, a man by the name of Faisal Zira, told me stories, kind of like a Scheherazade, about the Bedouin laws. And I was thinking, oh my God, this is really weird. A bunch of Bedouin laws about people on camels going across the desert, and two guys on two camels are walking across, and one guy's camel dies, and the second guy takes his simtar up and he holds it over the other guy's head, and the other guy says, no, please, please help me get to the oasis, please. My children will take care of your children, who will take care of their children, etc. And puts his simtar back. And that man was the grandfather of Faisal Zira. And Faisal Zira was indebted to the children and the grandchildren of that man.
The ripple effect.
Whose life his grandfather was saved.
Extraordinary.
So, I mean, the laws that have evolved from religion are so valuable to humanity today. We wouldn't be here if we hadn't had that long discussion, that long experience. And so don't throw anything away, folks. You know.
No, and what is that foundational human law? It's love, pure and simple. That's the frequency. That's where, if, as you're talking about caregiving, right? Caring for the peace of another person. Isn't that the essence of love? I get chills, right? But it's also caretaking. I've had this semantic conversation a lot with people who are in the caregiving industry who say, no, I don't want to be called a caretaker. I'm a caregiver. Well, guess what? Caregiving also is caretaking, because the gift is in the giving. What you receive from being a caregiver means that you are also receiving. You are also taking that peace and that love from that moment. It's equal.
The hyphen in your name, Henry Cameron, that hyphen could be a double-headed arrow.
It is.
And that's the care that goes both ways.
Hey, are you like me, always looking for ways to make a positive impact in the world? Well, then join me in sponsoring Desire Child Care Organization. We are a legally incorporated, fully volunteer-based organization in Uganda, committed to providing essential needs, holistic arts-based education, and a safe family environment to 33 vulnerable children, ages 2 to 14. Your monthly sponsorship can help improve the lives of these kids toward a better future. Desire Child Care is different from any other charity I know because, well, we have zero administrative overhead. Every penny goes to the kids.
And we have a plan towards self-sufficiency through agriculture. So support is temporary. It's kind of like a leg up. Visit desirechildcare.org to learn more and get involved. Let's empower and inspire the Desire Kids together. Thanks.
Well, I hyphenated my name because after I survived my son's demise from brain cancer, he was 13 years old. I was a single father and he was my only child. And there was no word like widow or orphan to identify who I was. Talk about being a lost traveler. So I hyphenated his name with mine to serve as that double arrow, as you called it, right? We are, it's a bond that is eternal. It keeps his name in the world and connects and associates us. And everyone who meets me gets to meet Cameron too, through me, right?
What's your story with you and Cameron?
So, I was a single dad and he developed brain cancer at 11, anaplastic astrocytoma, which is typically only found in Caucasian men over 45. So why he got it at 11, there are no answers. No other kid on the block got it. No other kid at school got it. He was a Waldorf kid. They cleaned with non-toxic, you know, cleaners. And that, so there was nothing. I cleaned my house with steam and we ate whole food. I mean, there was no toxic environment that would have elicited this in him. And because no other child in his vicinity, circle of friends, school, or community got the same thing, stands to reason it was not environmental. It was also a kind of cancer that was not inheritable, right? I'm a cancer survivor myself, which I know why now that I had it before he was born, because that was his road. And to know from the time he could understand language that Papa was a survivor of cancer, when he got his diagnosis, that eliminated all his fear. He didn't have a moment of fear or anxiety or sadness or rage or anything else around his situation, because he was living with a survivor. He was the child of a survivor. And so the hope was always there all the way to the end, right? And now my perception of death, what we call death, has completely shifted. I don't believe in it anymore. Just like the illusion of separation while we are in the flesh, I don't believe that we're separate. There are two aspects of our humanity, our spiritual and our physical. The spiritual, we can also call the soul, we can call frequency, right? Energy. We know that everything is frequency, and frequency can't be created or destroyed. It just changes form. And it's up to us who are here in the conscious mind, in the physical, to identify what forms those energies have taken now. And so my connection with Cameron, that double arrow, is perpetual. That's eternal. That's never going to change. He's my best teammate. His hand is in all of this. He and I started a foundation together. I've built a theater company around this concept of the liminal space between the human physical and the human spiritual, called the Liminos Project. And we are an international company sharing stories from all over the world, the stories that are dying with the people that carry them. Right? The stories that grandmothers whispered to their grandchildren in the quiet of night, or the ones that grandfather, you know, smoking a pipe by the fireside would tell. And there's a divine masculine ritual to that. And there's a divine feminine ritual to the grandmother's tales. And so we are curating these stories. We're collecting these stories. We are bringing together artists, writers, actors from all over the world to share these stories in audio theater format, which means that they're accessible to everyone. So this is our gesture of caregiving. This is our gesture of bringing that peace, bringing that balance back globally. And what we receive in turn as artists is unmeasurable.
So how can you take the philosophy, if I could call it that, that you're espousing, and get it past the crazy people that are the genocide experts and the build these horrible weapons that they can march down the middle of the street in a parade. I'm saying these people are, you know, this is what's happened to the nation. The concept of the nation has gotten so ridiculously powerful. How can you take the stories that you're talking about, and the stories in the Bible, the stories in the Bedouin law stories, you name it. How can you take all these stories and use them to our advantage so that we can get away from this nation building process that is going to blow us all up?
It's a great question. And I expect that it's not terribly different from what's in your manifesto. It's being the example, an example of how it can work. It's creating a manifesto that says this is possible. And the more people who hear these stories and receive this frequency, tap into this frequency, this ancient human frequency, that hopefully they will see the transformation, the metamorphosis within themselves. You can lead a horse to water, Jeff, but you can't make him drink. I can't go to a fascist and say, listen to our stories, it's going to change your life. I can't even get to the guy. And granted, and they are all men, by the way. I can't even access him, right? But somebody may find these stories, which are audio theater, that can, you know, that's frequency in and of itself, right? Share it with their children. Or maybe it's somebody they're connected to peripherally, shares it with their children, and their child tells them about it at school. And so they say, Papa, I want to listen to the story too. And they'll go and listen to that story. Maybe the parent will listen to the story as well. And it has a ripple effect. Just like the division, just like the hate, just like the, you know, all the challenges we're seeing, love has a ripple effect as well. And the more you hear something, the more you're apt to absorb it and adopt it and believe it, positively or negatively. And so if we are putting a deliberate frequency on a homeopathic level, this is a homeopathic dose of goodness that we are sharing out in the world, the hope is that it'll affect the whole system.
In time. The problem that comes to mind is that while we are on a train without a track, there are people next to us who are on trains that have tracks that they have laid out, like Putin's train and his track. And I think about Stalin's train and his track, Hitler's train and his track.
Yep.
We are not going to be able to topple those people. What we have to do is somehow prevent it from happening. And we've got some people out here in the world who are there. There's nothing we're going to be able to do. Convincing them is not going to work. All the love in the world around them is not going to work. So how do we get that problem dealt with?
What I know to be true is that there is more goodness in this world than we are told through the media or shown. There are a lot more of those smiles that you talked about than there are clenched jaws of rage. Those separate tracks that you're talking about are part of the illusion that I was saying. We are all the train. Stalin and Hitler, Mussolini included. We're all the train. And the message that I'm trying to share through universal life skills education, right? Because there are 8 billion people on the planet right now, more or less, right? Yep. Every single one of us is going to be learning the same essential life skills. These are communication skills, emotional literacy. Grief is a universal life skill. We're all going to grieve at some point, right? Financial literacy, sexual literacy, trade, you know, all of these things, nutrition, self-care, all of these things that every human being is going to learn in one measure or another, not question of whether we are going to learn them, because we are learning them daily and applying them daily at different proficiencies. Most of us are deficient in many of these essential life skills. Why? I feel that it's because the population that has been given almost exclusive responsibility for teaching and mentoring and imparting these universal skills have been parents. And parents inherit a deficient toolkit from their parents, their grandparents, their great-grandparents.
That's true.
It's true, right? So how can we blame them? How can we expect them to know how to impart these skills that are required learning for all of us? We all learn them. The question is, in what measure do we learn them, and at what proficiency are we today? And that's for the individual to determine. Now, I think when we look at Putin and his machine and all the others that you mentioned, we're only seeing a small picture that is manipulated by media to look a certain way. We can't get into his head. We don't know what keeps him up at night, right? But what we do know is that he was a little baby once. Something happened in his foundation, in his development, to get him from that point A of innocence and love and pure childhood wonder into where he is now. And that goes for Hitler, Mussolini, all the rest of them. If we start remembering that they're really no different, they were all little babies at one time. Something happened in their journey to get them here. And it is possible. We have seen people transform. We have seen people reevaluate. What am I doing? Right? But it's because, not because they're proficient in the skills that are causing all of these problems. It's because they are deficient in most of the other ones that would eliminate the problem. So if we start this conversation through storytelling, through teaching, through education, if I want to learn Chinese cuisine, I'm going to go and find an expert to teach me that skill so I can become more proficient in it. If I want to learn violin, or if I want to learn a sport or a new language, I need to find a master in that skill to help me personally elevate my skill proficiency. And that's no different for essential life skills. There are those of us out here, yourself included, who are masters, not in all life skills, but in very, very specific skills. That's why I started the podcast.
Sponsorship and listener support of the Lost Traveler podcast benefits the Lost Travelers Club, a volunteer-operated charitable foundation under United Charitable, a 501c3 public charity. Peregrine is the proper noun we now use to describe a parent who endures the loss of their beloved child, forever carrying their memory and embarking on a lifelong journey of grief, resilience, and hope. The Lost Travelers Club provides programs, resources, and empowerment opportunities for peregrines globally who are navigating their grief journey. Parents of child loss, getting there together. You can support this important work by becoming a sponsor of this podcast or visiting www.losttravelers.club for more information or to make a donation. Thanks for listening and for your continued support.
So you take these skills that we're developing ongoing skill development. And that's at the human level. We could make some kind of a Maslow's pyramid here, yes, where the bottom level is really the teaching that we have to teach people with their, teach them manners and teach them how to respect and teach them the golden rule. And then the higher we get, the closer to activating our relationships so that our relationships can be prepared to change the world. And I don't, my problem is the part that's up here. I think that what you're doing is really establishing that foundation of the pyramid and preparing people to be able to change the world. Okay, how do we change the world? Now, how do we do it? And that's the difficult part. That, in my opinion, that's where we're at right now. That's the second, that's the suspended human evolution where, okay, we've got these individual skills that are being developed as we speak. And you're a perfect example of that. What you're doing, what you have done, your spiritual relationship with your spiritual son. And, you know, that's all part of how you bring to the table what you need to have in order to plan the second human evolution. And that's where I'm at right now. I'm trying to figure out what we do so that we can actually design the second human evolution without having Trumps and Putins Gagolinos.
And listen, I know that they're going to be, we've got listeners in 43 countries around the world, maybe 44 now. And there are going to be people who are going to be pro-Putin. There are going to be people who are going to be pro-Trump who are listening to this podcast. And I don't want to validate anybody. I want to say you are where you are on the path. I don't want to say that my way is the right way. I don't want to say that there's a hierarchy of proficiency or higher consciousness at all. You are where you are. Where you are, because if it was meant to be otherwise, it would be. That's a hard one when we're talking about the difficulties of the world, right? And let's face it, since humans emerged from the dust, the world has been in chaos. There has never been a time of peace in human history. So what do we do with that, right? Do we start at the top of the pyramid and find a way to chop off the head of the snake, or do we cultivate the younger generations, which it's just a blink before they're carrying the burden that we're leaving behind. It's no time at all, as any parent can tell you, or grandparent or great-grandparent can tell you. It's no time, it's the blink of an eye before the previous generation dies off and the next one takes over, right? But I think part of the challenge that we have is that we have been caught in a repetitive cycle of dysfunction where the majority of the people who are in quote-unquote power, because I think that's illusory as well, if anybody realized that there are a whole lot more smiles than there are angry people out there who want to control everything, the tables would turn pretty quickly. So really, I think it's about empowering through the messaging, through the storytelling, through things, you know, manifestos like your book, to show the world you already have all the tools in your kit. You may not know how to use all of them well yet. You have permission. You can't use my tools because they're mine. I made them. But just like you referred to your mentors, those mentors laid their toolkit out in front of you, and you were able to sit there and select for yourself which tools you wanted to play with. They freely said, use my tools. And you couldn't use their tools the way they did because you're not them. But what you did, Jeff, and what I do, what we all do, every human being, is we synthesize those tools with the tools in our own kit, and we create unique tools for our lives. If it feels right and it feels good, it probably is. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't feel quite right and it doesn't feel quite good, it's probably not. And the magic in this picture is that time and space exist in a pinpoint, surrounded by an infinite peacock tail of possibility. And your only responsibility as a human being is to choose one feather, one path to go along. And if you arrive at a point B where you don't feel good, safe, or happy, it magically transforms into a new point A surrounded by infinite possibilities, and you choose a different direction.
So is there a way to, I guess, on the front cover of my book, I write the process is the solution.
Yes.
The process is the solution. And that's very much part of the manifesto idea where, you know, if we don't have a process to propel us to the safe harbor of the second human evolution, then we're just going to keep being on this train without designing the future. So my big question that I'm, you know, ask you and I ask myself is, you know, what is that process? And when I listen to you talking about love and about the next generations, boy, that sure is job one of the process.
Yeah.
It's make sure that you're teaching the next generation as much as you possibly can about what's happened, what worked, what didn't work, what we do again. I mean, we've got to get these tools, at least the planning tools. They can change them if they want. But one thing I learned about planning is that when I plan from one completely different facility to another one, pretty much the planning methodologies were the same.
Templates are great. I love a template.
So, yeah, I mean, that's right. And in fact,
that's what our ancient stories are. That's what our ancient tales are. They are templates. I was in 2014, I was invited by the United Nations to go to Fiji to work with indigenous youth to develop a workshop in creative activism using folklore as a vehicle for positive change. They were moving from a series of military coups, one after the other, into the first democratic elections in over a generation. And I didn't want to be the big white American theater guy coming down and say, all right, little brown people, here's how you do it the American way. You know, I wanted it to come out of them. And when you talk about teaching that, Jeff, this is what comes to mind. I love etymology and the roots of words. The word education, in its simplest form, in its original root in Latin, means not to thrust information into a head. That's in, meaning in, Trudeau, meaning thrust, right? It's intrusive. Very often in our educational ways, let's say, it's intrusive. My contention is that all the information of the cosmos are already there in us. True teaching, true education, meaning educato, meaning leading out of or drawing out of as if from a well. That's the essence of education. It's to recognize, validate, respect, and appreciate that we already have everything that we need. We have all the wisdom of the universe. No one human being is above another. There is no you, your highness, your eminence. That's all baloney, right? There is no one human that's above another. There is no one consciousness that's above another. There is no one religion that's above another. We are the train. We are the party. Now what? Now what?
That's the title of your book, Now What?
Now what? Exactly. Will you co-write it with me? Because I'm not a solo artist. I'm a collaborative artist.
I'm very much into now what. I mean, that's what's nice to hear you talking is that you've really packaged the basic foundation, and it's a solid foundation. It's a foundation that we learned. It's the foundation that are in the good books of the world. It's the foundation that's in the good hearts that are in the world. It's the foundation that really got us to the problem of population that we have right now, because we have more people in the world, more good people in the world.
Yes.
We are suffering from all sorts of problems that are good, that we have created. We're good people. We don't hurt each other as much. So I take all of that foundation. I mean, what an incredibly solid foundation, because that is a global foundation that starts with the smiles that we were talking about, but it continues with the education and the practicing, not just the but the education, the Socratic process, where you teach and those who teach have to then turn around and teach. And so you set out that process of keeping that foundation solid. Now, what's next? What's next? And that's the big challenge that we have, because it's got to follow some kind of a basic process that needs to be a global process. I don't know the answer, because when people say, oh, well, tell me about the second human evolution. Well, take all the problems that we have right now and eliminate them. Okay, is that going to, you know, that's just...
Nature, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. It's going to fill it up with new problems. Right? Finding that out with AI right now. Touché. All these problems, but boy.
That's right. That's right. So what's next? What's next?
Shadow and Light LLC was established by Dave Roberts and Reverend Patty Farino, co-authors of When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister. Their mission is to empower individuals to transcend life's challenges by integrating spiritual practices with psychology to achieve peace. They are available for individualized spiritual counseling, virtual or in-person book club meetings, or presentations and workshops to universities, organizations, and other interested groups. For further information, visit psychologyprofessorandminister.com.
It requires engaging the imagination, which is a very human quality uniquely. A dragonfly, as far as we know, can't imagine a poem or a garden design or an architectural triumph, nor can my service dog, Flat Stanley, the way that a human can. And so it takes engaging the imagination. The imagination is a muscle that needs working out. And it's another reason I'm a storyteller through the art of theater. Art is the bridge between the physical and the spiritual humanity. Art is the bridge. I'm convinced of that. So if that's where my convictions lie, that's where I begin. I begin with what stories are not being told. What stories used to be told? The first people sitting around a fire under the stars, imagining what makes trees grow and what spirits inhabit the animals and what, you know, personalities are imbued in that mountain or that sea, right? What makes the stars twinkle and who are we? All of these are our primordial human selves that still exist. We're not that different. And to get humanity storytelling out of the imagination, that to me is the igniting spark. It's an important question. What next? What now? You start with where you are. You know, your entire biography is varied and vast and fascinating as it is. Mine as well. You know, I grew up all over the world. I think that was part of my gift in my foundation, was my dad was a cultural diplomat for the USIA. Do you remember the USIA?
Information Agency?
Yeah, no. The US Information Agency. Nobody knows about it because it was the propaganda wing of the US government in the 60s and 70s, before there was a McDonald's outside the US. Right? You remember those days? I do. And this was, my dad's job was to produce huge expos of, in quotes, American culture.
Oh, huh.
To import to the world. This is before the internet. This is before even when satellites were new. And so it was an expose of all things American, from industry to the arts, mm-hmm. to cuisine, including fast food, which isn't cuisine, but you know, we say things like, as American as apple pie and baseball. Well, neither of those are rooted in America. What does that mean, American? It means that we've appropriated all this culture, wrapped it up in a big, shiny red, white, and blue ribbon, and sold it back to the world as American. the stuff that they invented, the stuff that came from Africa, the stuff that came from Europe, the stuff that came from Scandinavia and all over the world, South America. And they bought it because it was a really good show. It was all very superficial and nobody looked under the hood. Right. Mm-hmm. And here we are. So I feel this, I don't call it a compulsion because it doesn't carry that kind of stress with me, but I do feel like my calling is to undo some of the damage that my father's work did in the world through the work that I'm doing now, through charitable works. I've been mentoring a small fledgling organization in Uganda for the past year. This young man who would be, is exactly the same age my son Cameron would be now. He single-handedly rescued 33 children from the streets of Kampala, the slums. These are compromised and vulnerable kids. He felt that calling. He had nothing himself. He's a farmer. And he cast a wide net in the world through his mobile phone, looking for experts in early childhood education so that he could help these kids ages 2 to 14. Wow. To help them build a foundation, right? That's how we came to meet. A friend of mine heard from Bugingo his story, and my friend said, Henry, you are obviously meant to be his mentor. I know you. This kid is the real deal. He needs your mentorship. He connected us, and we're still multiple times a day. We've gotten all the kids out of the slums. We've done amazing things with very, very little. But our imagination, our ingenuity, this organization, Desire Child Care Organization, is the only organization of its kind coming from the continent of Africa that I have heard say our goal, our vision is to become 100% self-sufficient through agriculture and to create a holistic education for these children to give them the solid foundation they deserve, right? So these things are popping up everywhere in my life, and I have the capacity to be a plate spinner, a vaudevillian plate spinner, right? I've got my theater work over here. I've got my, you know, work for parents who have survived the loss of their kids. I've got my Ugandan organization over here. All of these little things, these little singularities, that are creating a frequency of love and caregiving and peacemaking,
yes,
that will and do have a ripple effect when I tell the story.
That's great. You're great. You are a very good storyteller. You are.
As you are.
You know, I like that.
That's
well, I'm learning. And my goal in life is to learn more than I teach.
Well, so, yeah. Yeah. I mean, each one of us is equally both a teacher and a student, every human being, right? So what's next? It's just recognizing that. Recognizing that the world is in the state it's in, because if it was meant to be otherwise, it would be. Take where you are as an individual, knowing that you are the train, knowing that you are, and acting like it, that you are the party, that you are the universe, that you are the cosmos, that you are, you know, every religion says that we are created in the divine image, right? Well, that means we have the permission to be all the things that we imbue the divine creator with, both creatively and destructively. But even destruction brings with it creation, doesn't it?
The Shiva principle.
That's right. So when you step back and look at the big picture, it's all the same thing. The illusion of light and dark. There's no light and dark. It's all light. It's all love. The shadow is an illusion. It doesn't emit any cold or heat. It doesn't have any power unless you put it there. That's your power. Is to imbue the darkness with power. Something only has as much power as you're willing to give it. That's how powerful you are. And when you talk about these destructive forces in the world, the more we empower them, the more that we shine a media spotlight on them, which empowers them even more. I'm not saying ignore them, but I'm saying focus on the other stuff. Focus on what's real. Focus on what there's more of already. And those are the smiles and the goodness and the human kindness that exists in this world.
I couldn't say anything more in this interview, because what you have done is you said it all. And you have solidified the question, what's next? Because the question has to be out there for people to hear and to think about. Imagine. As part of that foundation on the that bottom of the pyramid foundation that is so strong, that includes the imagination of what's next.
My grandmother used to tell me when I was a little boy, she said, honey, raising children is like building a house. It's all about the foundation. If you invest in the foundation, the house could burn to the ground and you can build it up again. But if you start with a weak foundation, you're dooming that house to collapse in on itself. So we better focus on the foundation. You can always go back and reinforce and fix and, you know, change. That takes a lot of time and resources and effort to do so. But if we're focused on the building of the foundation, the chances of building a strong future house
is
greater.
And cities and Lahainas.
That's right.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I'm Queen Bee Divine. The cure is conversation. And where can you find me? At BluntReflections.com, where I will be talking to guests from around the world that not only share their time, but their insights and their tips on how they became the best version of who they were meant to be. So if you're looking for a great story and a great time, check me out at BluntReflections.com. The cure is conversation. And remember, blasé blasé means to tell your story.
Did you ever watch Young Frankenstein? Mel Brooks.
I love that one.
Okay. So you know the scene. I don't know why this just popped into my head when we're talking about all this, but you're getting an idea of how my mind works. You know the scene where the villagers have attacked the monster and they've put him in the dungeon and he's wearing that spiked metal shackle around his neck and he's got all those chains and he's like, yeah, right? The Frankenstein, right, character played brilliantly by Gene Wilder, unlocks all the chains and everything. And he's holding him like a mother and he's petting his head and he says, look at you, look at how marvelous and beautiful are you. You are good. And he just, all of the stress and the monsterness of him fades into this, he starts wailing because he has never heard anyone tell him how good he is. Can you imagine if somebody took up Putin or Trump or anybody else that we have pointed a finger at and vilified,
right?
As you know, and chased down with the torches, saying that they're the root of all of our problems and all of our evil. Can you imagine if somebody just picked them up and cuddled them and said, you are good. Look at that profile. Look at that noble chin. You know, that's what's missing in our world is for people who are struggling, people who are suffering in their deficiencies. They are mired. They're stagnating in their deficiencies. For somebody to step up and recognize the potential that every human has for truth and goodness and kindness and peace and say, I see it, look at that face, right? I mean, can you imagine if somebody, I would love to do that to these people. So listen, I'm gonna put a link to your book in the description of the podcast, because I think that what you are creating through your manifesto, and I love a good manifesto, And the message that you are putting out there, which is not different from mine, I mean, it is all about recognizing the need for cultivating the peace in others, which unlocks it in yourself. I mean, is that an accurate description of the essence of spirit?
Very much so.
I'll make sure that we have a link to that so that everyone listening can benefit from your manifesto and be inspired to adapt it for their own purpose. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I mean, it's a simple book, and I'm giving it away to all my friends. I mean, it's like, you know, but when I started writing it, I said, this is going to be a calling card. It's not going to be a book to make money at, you know.
Love that.
That's just so that I can have meetings like this one, you know, and talk to other people, because it's the talk that's going to propel the concept. Books don't necessarily propel a concept. They can support it. But I mean, my favorite books today are history books by John Meacham, and, you know, you name it. And I think that what I'm interested in doing is just seeing how people take this stuff and run with it. And I'm at an age in my life where I'm just as happy to see somebody take something and put it into their own words and don't even use my name. I don't have to get any credit. That's not the game. You know, the real game is a global game. And that means I am so far away from being Joe Global than the man in the moon. I mean, I'm not interested in that. I want to see us continue, and you just watch your blossoming, because obviously you've got an international group of people listening, and they're going to be able to take these ideas from you and run with them, and you will be part of their story. That's the most important.
As you will, as we all are, you know. Yeah. But just our sitting here for this hour, having this conversation, effortlessly gives permission to anyone listening.
Absolutely.
The same. Now, as we wrap up, one of the things that I've started doing, and this is my fourth season with the Lost Traveler podcast, is I have asked each of my co-hosts this season to ask a question to the next co-host that they want to hear. And it's all intuitive, right? There's no, they don't know who's coming up next, right? So I'm going to ask you the question that was asked for your benefit and ours. And then I would like you to ask a question to the next co-host in line.
What was the question that you asked me that somebody previously asked?
The last co-host asked this question for you. Describe, and you kind of already said it, but you can elaborate on it if you want. Describe a defining moment that has characterized your life. Like a pivotal moment that changed your trajectory.
Whoa, how about the day I was born? It's just really, I mean, that is it. It's the day I was born, because from that point on, that experience unfolded into where it ends up 75 years from that day. So to ask a question to the next person, I would say, what's your definition of the future?
What's your definition of the future? In other words, what is the future that you imagine that you would like to manifest, or how do you define future?
I don't know.
As a concept. Oh boy. Okay.
What's the definition? I'm very much into definitions. I'm very much into making sure. An example of that is if you read the New Yorker magazine, which I love, But they're constantly confusing the word insure and ensure and usher. It's unbelievable how poorly their I don't know, copy editors are missing the fact that insure has a lot to do with the guarantee of money. You know, I mean, it's a balance thing. And ensure is process, and I'm really into process. So it's difficult to me every time they correct, they have a self-correcting process where they take ensure and they convert it to insure. No, do not do that. I'm really into definitions, and I have commended New Yorker in writing for their incredible writing, articles, you name it. But I've also sent them a few quite strong notes that you've got to follow the definitions that are given to you by the right dictionaries, because some of these dictionaries, and they wrote back to me once saying that, you can use them interchangeably. And that's even in the blank, blank dictionary. And I'm going, well, throw that dictionary away.
Exactly.
So, what's your definition of the future? Yeah, darn right. Let's hear what they have to say.
Love that. Can I ask you to answer your own question? What's your definition of the future?
Something that I seek, but that I am most interested in the next step, future, and what I do that is progressive from what I have done and am doing right now and are doing right now, so that the step after the next step is better than the next step.
Love it.
Are you tired of feeling run down? Do you wish there was a natural, non-invasive, drug-free way to improve your overall health and well-being? If so, then let me introduce you to the Super Patch Company. Super Patches are a range of small neurotech patches that can help with a variety of issues, including sleep, immunity, pain mitigation, athletic performance, focus, anxiety, and stress. They're safe for everyone to use, and they're backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Order your Super Patches today. Now available in the EU, UK, Turkey, Canada, and the US. If you're ready to take control of your health, you can find out more online at dianedinkmeyer.superpatch.com. Super Patches. There's a patch for that.
I'm waiting for you to ask me what my definition of the future is.
What is your definition of the future?
I put a lot of thought into this, actually. And it's a very simple answer. The future is a destination that only exists in the imagination. Period.
Well done with brevity.
I try to be concise. I strive.
That was good. The question was with brevity, and the answer was with brevity. Thank you.
It's a destination that only lives in the imagination. And I must add to that, that is also my definition of the past. Both the past and the future only live in our imagination.
Well, now, come on, let's get Hindu now. Isn't that the same definition as the present?
No.
Okay.
Because the present, as I said before, is a pinpoint in time and space that's real. And that's this moment. And your entire, this is what I started to say earlier, your entire biography, my entire biography, not only ours, but your parents, your grandparents, their grandparents, all the way back to mitochondrial Eve, our common ancestor. All that pain, all that suffering, all that love and joy has led and prepared us Jeff and Henry Cameron for this conversation in this moment. And that's the only thing we know. That's the only thing that we can hang our hat on and say, this is real, because we are witnessing it and we're experiencing it. Everything in the past only lives in our imagination and memory, right? And the memory of your past, your memories are yours. They're not going to be, even somebody who experienced the same moment with you is going to have a different memory of it, right? Same with the future. So thank you for sharing this very real hour with me. It's been a pleasure and an honor. And I hope that we'll stay in touch. I feel like I've made a new friend today.
Thank you so much. Henry Cameron, you are a very, very wise man. Thank you.
As are you. Thank you. It's great when two heads can come together and share this way. Do you hear the drums in the background?
No. Uh-oh. What's that?
I'm in a tiny village in the southwest of Spain, in a tiny remote village that was settled in 1211. The name is bigger than the village, only 700 people, but they have regular festivals, mostly around the saints and the Madonna and all of this. And we're in the midst of a festival. So what a great way to end the episode.
What is the name of the town that you're in?
It's called Arroyo Molinos de Montanches.
De Molinos.
No, Arroyo Molinos.
Molinos.
Which means mill stream. De Montanches. Montanches is the castle town up on the mountain. We're in the foothills of a mountain range. Montanches is beautiful here. I've lived here 3.5 years. The community is, the folk soul is so alive here. And just the kindest, most lovely, and we're remote. We're only like 40 minutes from any city. And so it's a very special and magical place. Hope you'll visit, you and your wife.
Well, we love Spain. I mean, we've house-swapped in Barcelona and done a lot of traveling around the northern.
Extremadura. We're near the border of Portugal in the southwest part of the country.
Nice.
Gorgeous. And nobody comes here because it's not coastal.
How did you get there?
How did I get here?
Yeah.
Well, I was a lost traveler. No, I was planning to set up my Liminos project, the theater company in the UK. And then we were waiting on some funding that was going to delay my getting residency in the UK. And so I was going to be floating for a few months, and I asked my colleagues, hey, can I float in Europe? I'd much rather float in Europe than back in the States. They said, sure. This is all pre-COVID and pre-Brexit. So I decided to stay. My aunt lives here. And so I came to visit her. She lives in a tinier village than mine, about 15 minutes from here. And her next door neighbor, who was 96 at the time, he's since passed, said, you know, I have a house, an empty house, fully furnished in a nearby village that was my mother's house. And I've totally redone it, remodeled it. It's an 800-year-old house. And if you want to rent it, $200 a month, four-bedroom house. Look at my ceilings.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's unbelievable. So I said, sure, I'm not going to look that gift horse in the mouth. So I decided that I would rent it and stay for a month or two. In the middle of the second month, COVID hit and I got stuck and I couldn't leave the country. Nobody could. So it came to the end of the lockdowns, and I had a choice to make: either go back to the UK, back to the US, or get my residency in Spain and start our theater company here, because Extremadura is the most economically depressed part of the country. And so the cost of living is very inexpensive here, and you know, this house is $200 a month. Food is, it's a rural environment, so it's all local and fresh. Farmers market every Thursday right out my back door. I mean, it's paradise. And so I decided that with my colleagues that this is going to be our home base for the Liminos project instead of the UK or the US. And so here I stay, and I'm applying for residency. And
what is your profession that you're going to college for, university? What's your
Me?
Yeah, what's your
Well, I have three. My overarching purpose is universal life skills education. And I have a long history professionally with that. So, underneath that umbrella, I have the Liminos Project, which is my professional theater, which
right?
we're starting, we're launching now as an audio theater company. And we've started a series for children called Luminous Tales. We're taking these stories from around the world and producing them in the way that old radio used to be. You know, it's all got atmosphere and sound effects and music and all of that. It's beautiful. You go
That's
to
great. Wow.
liminos.org is the website. And then I have my charitable work through the Lost Travelers Club. Losttravelers.club is the website. And we have a lot of projects going right now that we're developing that are thrilling. And then desirechildcare.org, which is a Ugandan organization that I mentor. And then I just got my certification in my international certification in grief and survival counseling, bereavement, and all of that. So those are pretty much, you know,
That's enough.
I'd say it's enough for a single person. But you know, I'm surrounding myself with wonderful people and I'm meeting people who I want to collaborate with and find
Okay, nice.
ways to forward together, you know,
Wow.
to figure out what's next for all of us, you know.
Well, well done. And thank you for letting me in on your hour.
Well, and thank you for sharing the hour as a co-host. Hopefully we'll do it again. I think we got a part two in us.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, meanwhile, let's stay in touch, please. And we'll check in on social media wherever you are. And listeners,
Good.
please go into the description and access his book on Amazon or wherever great books are sold. And let's start this this process of peace building together as a global community, an international community. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Henry Cameron Allen.
You've been listening to season four of the Lost Traveler podcast with Henry Cameron Allen. Visit me online at henryallen.org. Thank you to my guests, and thank you for tuning in. Let's keep striving for a better world together.